Here the Turtle is presented by Toyota. Toyota helps you get the most out of your drive. Just ask a friend who drives one. Shop buyatoyota.com, Toyota's official website for deals, to find the Toyota that's right for you. Toyota, let's go places. It's Monday, May 18th, 2020. It's Hear the Turtle presented by Toyota. And Keith, we have come on the show consistently over the past few weeks and been like, well, there's no sports to talk about. There's no Maryland news to talk about. No sports are happening. When are sports going to happen? Well, we did have some Maryland news this week. A new quarterback for the Terps, Keith. How about you tell the fans a little bit about him? He's got a notable brother.
Tua Tagovailoa. Taylor, and hopefully I'm going to be an expert at pronouncing his name. Maybe right now I'm not quite there yet.
You, me, and Johnny Holiday.
Yeah, we have our work cut out for us, but
yes.
The brother of Heisman winner Tua Tagovailoa, now Miami Dolphin, drafted in the first round by the Dolphins and transferring from University of Alabama to the University of Maryland to bolster the quarterback room, which also includes Josh Jackson and Lance Lejeune. So 5'11", 208-pound quarterback, only threw for 100 yards last year in some mop-up duty last year for the Crimson Tide, 11-2 record in a Citrus Bowl for that team. But an incredible high school quarterback, rewrote the Alabama high school record books, becoming the only quarterback in state history to have at least four 400-yard passing performances in his career, threw for 3,728 yards, 35 touchdowns as a senior. So Mike Locksley is getting a guy who he's got the pedigree. You know, he's got an NFL caliber, bloodline with his brother, and somebody who down the road could figure into this Maryland offense as a game changer.
Yeah, if you're a college football fan, you have certainly watched Talia's older brother Tua play a lot for those Alabama teams, came off the bench to lead the Crimson Tide to a national championship against Georgia a few years ago. And then with Mike Locksley, had an amazing season in Locksley's year as the offensive coordinator. Now, as you said, Talia joins Josh Jackson and Lance Lejeune as the only three scholarship quarterbacks in that Maryland quarterback room. Talia is a little on the shorter side at 5'11", but can definitely spin it. When he was at the opening, won the longest throw contest, thrown at 66 yards at that competition. So he is a very, very talented guy. He was rated the number four pro-style quarterback coming out of high school. And one thing he does beyond hopefully what he brings on the field, I think you'd look for a shorter quarterback comparison like a Drew Brees or Russell Wilson. You hope that Talia could become someone like that. But from a name recognition standpoint, Mike Locksley put Maryland football on sort of the national stage on Friday night when that got announced. Biggest story in college football over the last 48 hours as we record here on Sunday. And with not a lot going on, that will be big in the eyes of recruits and fans in terms of what Mike Locksley is doing. He's had success with one of the brothers from Hawaii. Hopefully Talia can come have some success at Maryland. And then the other thing he does is he provides more competition for that quarterback room and allows those guys to all get better. Lance Lejeune obviously is going to have something to say about the starting quarterback position over the next few years. He's a very talented guy out of Louisiana. And we saw what Josh Jackson could do in some of his successful starts. And we know, Keith, having interviewed him, how dedicated and how cerebral he is. So he is certainly going to have something to say as well. So you want as much talent as possible, and that's what Mike Locksley's done, continuing what has been a very good recruiting stretch for him over the last few years. That really the biggest story in Maryland athletics. Other than that, not a ton. We turn from sort of football's period here. We'll hopefully move into an NBA draft type of situation with Jalen Smith and Anthony Cowan over the next few months. We'll see when that draft happens. But other than that, we just wait and see when sports restart. One of the sports that is restarting across the pond, Keith, is soccer, as the German Bundesliga came back. One of the people that analyzes those games is our guest this week, and that is Maurice Adu-Moadu, former Maryland All-American and national champion in 2005, and then went on to have a sensational professional career. The number one pick in the MLS Super Draft, played great in MLS before moving to Europe and playing for Scottish Power Rangers, one of the best teams in the Scottish Premier League over the last few decades, participates in one of the biggest rivalries there, the Old Firm Derby against Celtic, which he talked a lot about, and that's, there's some great stories there. Played in Turkey, the English Premier League, and then played in the World Cup as well, Keith. We had a sensational chat with Mo. As Sasha Sarofsky told me, and I told this to Mo when we started the interview, the man has the gift of gab, and he certainly did. A great analyst on Fox, and we had a great conversation with him.
Some great stories there. You know, I remember that World Cup team in 2010, watching them, that run they went on. So his stories from that, his stories from Maryland and his pro days. And I think we got him out of a little housework, a little around the house improvement. So I think he was happy to put some time aside and talk to us.
Yes, he wanted to continue to keep going because he didn't want to go back to the household chores. that he was being forced to do around the house. But Mo, great guy. And then make sure to watch, as soccer comes back, his analyst work on Fox Sports and on Bleacher Report TNT in the Champions League, doing some great stuff. Sit down and enjoy our interview with Mo Adu.
As the University of Maryland celebrates the start of another athletic season, Maryland Athletics is excited to announce the launch of Terps 10,000, our campaign for a goal of 10,000 Terrapin Club members. Individuals who join the Terrapin Club during the campaign and become new members will receive a Maryland Terrapin Club branded flag to proudly fly at your home, office, or tailgate. All current members are eligible to receive a flag by donating an additional $55 to the Terrapin Club. Plant your flag at terps10k.com.
We're back here on Hear the Turtle with Mo Adu. I don't know if I can go through your whole resume here. National champion, All-American, World Cup veteran. You played in, you know, some foreign leagues, but more importantly, a Maryland Terrapin for life. Mo Adu, live from California. Thanks for coming on with us.
Of course, man. It's a nice little intro you gave me there. Flattering, but I'm looking forward to this. It's always fun to talk about the Maryland days.
So first of all, now we've talked to a bunch of athletes who had their seasons ended. You were in the middle of doing analyst work for a variety of different things, Champions League, stuff for Fox Sports. Are you jonesing to get back to analyze some live soccer? You've been watching some of that Belarus Premier League. What was sort of the situation like when you heard that sort of all of your sport was coming to a close in the middle of what was a big professional time for you?
Yeah, I think we started to first get an inclination that something might happen in soccer or just in sports in general when you started having some closed door games with Champions League. And that's when the gravity of the situation started to get a little bit bigger. We started to realize, okay, this is going to hit everyone. And then when it did hit, it was just like, wow, okay. So initially I was like, I have an eight month old child now. And so I've been on the road quite a bit. And so my initial reaction was like, okay, cool. You know, a little bit of family time, but we'll be back in a few weeks. Shouldn't be too long. And then now it's dragged on a little bit longer. And, you know, there's no sports on TV. And so you're just sitting there. There's a big void that just waiting to be filled. But yeah, I'm definitely eager to get back to, I think we all are as fans and as former players, athletes, we're all eager for sports to come back. There's a big void that needs to be filled. We're all missing it. The passion of watching live games and for me now being on this side of it, analyzing games and commentating on games and being in stadiums and whatnot. It's going to be interesting how it does come back and when it finally gets to a state of some level of normalcy. Because I think initially when sports return, it's going to be behind closed door games. There might not be live coverage. So it's going to be interesting to see how that dynamic plays out.
Now, when you initially made your transition to broadcasting, I remember talking to Sash, and he said, Mo will be great. He's got the gift of gab. What was that transition like for you from coming off of your playing career to getting in the booth and analyzing guys you played with and all the different leagues around the world? Because for soccer, it's, you don't have just, you know, sit and do the U.S. League. You've got to do all the international games. You got to do Premier League, the Bundesliga, all those different things.
Yeah, initially, you know, I was hesitant because I was just so focused on trying to get back to playing. You know, I'd suffered some injuries my last few years of playing. And so that last stretch before I did make the transition and did finally retire, I was just so focused on trying to get back into playing. And, you know, I was fortunate that I'd made some good connections during my playing days. And so one of my friends who works with Fox kept reaching out to me like, hey, I think you'd be good at this. You should give it a try. And I was kind of just like, you know, I want to focus on trying to play first. And then as that became a little bit more obvious that injuries were going to win out in that battle, I was like, you know what, let me go ahead and give it a try. And we did a couple of test runs and, you know, to me, I was like, oh God, I'm horrible at this. I enjoyed like, I got some work to do, but I think it's like anything else. The more reps you get, the more comfortable you get. I was fortunate that in both of my situations with Fox as well as with Turner and Bleacher Report for Champions League, I worked with some former teammates. And I think that helped to ease the nerves a little bit, helped to transition things. But I love it. I mean, it's something that I feel like I did as a player anyway, watching film and analyzing film and breaking down stuff and seeing how you can, you know, find ways to exploit your opponent and things like that. So I was constantly doing that as a player anyway. So now the transition, I think from that standpoint, it was something I was doing already. So I enjoy that. But I also enjoy the fact that it keeps me close to the game. And when you're a player, I was just telling one of my friends this the other day, actually, when you're a player, sometimes in the game, you just have tunnel vision, right? You're focused on what's happening there and now. You're focusing on the next play. You're focusing just on everything that's happening around you. How do you communicate with your teammates and the ball, everything that happens, it happens so quickly. So at times you don't get to fully appreciate the different stadiums you play in, the atmospheres and what the fans are doing and all that. And so now from this perspective, when I'm calling a game and it's on site, it's unbelievable, you know, to see some of the fan bases across the country, to witness the different cultures that different clubs have built up and to just see things from a different perspective. And I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
You guys seem to have a ton of fun on the TNT and the Fox set with, you know, Stu Holden and Tim Howard. What's that atmosphere like? You guys try to create some fun. I remember the clip of Stu and Steve Netch just sprinting around after a Tottenham game in the Champions League. What's that atmosphere like when you're broadcasting?
Yeah, it's off camera, right? We're fortunate that we have a good group of guys, and I've known some of them for quite a while. So it's off camera. We try to just translate that same energy and camaraderie onto camera. Obviously with a little bit of professionalism in there as well, but we try to just make it fun, enjoyable, as well as being critical in the right moments, making sure that from our first and foremost, our first priority is to analyze the game properly, you know, to give our insight and our thoughts and our opinions on what's happening in the games and all that kind of stuff. But then on the other side of that, we also want to enjoy it, right? I think it comes across a lot better if you're enjoying what you're doing and you enjoy who you work with. And I'm fortunate that I've walked into two situations where I thoroughly enjoy the guys that I work with. They're all willing to, from day one, have all been helpful in giving me different little pointers and tips of ways to get better, ways to approach this job, and just trying to all continuously help me in my growth and development in this new role.
Bruce, a couple of years back, you had the opportunity to go on Inside the NBA set with Shaquille O'Neal, Charles Barkley, those guys. There's a clip on YouTube. I encourage anybody listening to check it out. But are they as ridiculous in person as they seem on TV?
It's all banter with them. All they do is just crack on each other nonstop. The first thing that Shaq said to me when we, like, just in passing, he was like, said something. He tried to, like, obviously, my height compared to him, it's a big gap. And he said something along the lines of, like, calling me Kevin Hart or something like that, you know. It's just, and that's my first introduction to him, right? But, no, it was fun. It was a good little mix, a blend of the two sports. Seeing them try to play soccer, it's crazy, right? I think sometimes it takes you to see a professional athlete in a different sport try to play soccer for you to fully appreciate, you know, how difficult the game really is. Because I say it to a lot of people all the time, you know, you grow up developing hand-eye coordination. So, and this is not to negate or make it seem like other sports are easy. Not at all. No. All I'm saying is the level of difficulty now when you're trying to do the same things that you do with your hands. So you shoot the ball in basketball, you throw a football, you throw a baseball. But you never really grow up developing hand foot coordination or having to control anything with your feet. So now when you see like those guys and on that clip trying to score a goal, but trying to dribble or any of that kind of stuff, it's crazy. But it was fun. It was good. Good banter with them. Hopefully we adopted them to the sport now and they become a little bit more passionate about it, but it's always a good little synergy between the two sports.
Not many people can say they knocked down a shot in the inside the NBA set, and you now have that on your resume. Okay, going off the glass with it.
I give Stu crap about that all the time because he missed his shot. But I'm not gonna lie, man. A little bit of, if that was off camera, I would have been fine. I would have felt confident, comfortable. But man, Kenny called us out, and I was like, all right, let me get this right. I had to take my jacket off. I was wearing this tight jacket, so my arms were kind of restricted a little bit. I was like, I can't have any excuses. Let me take my jacket off. I didn't call bank, but hey, they all count. They all count.
Going back to your playing days, you grew up as a highly regarded player from California. How did you get yourself from California, where there was a bunch of places you could have played, to the University of Maryland for your 3 years in College Park?
I hate to admit this, and Sasha's going to love this, but Sasha, he did a good job in his recruiting. He came out and he convinced my mom, first and foremost. He realized that was a good way to get in with me. Because initially, I grew up a Michael Jordan fan, so UNC was high on my list. And then I went to UCLA around the corner. So in an ideal world, I probably would have gone to UCLA. It's close by. My family could have come to watch every game. My dad had just had a stroke my senior year in high school. So all those things lined up would have pointed me towards UCLA. But Sash came, watched one of my high school games, had a good conversation with myself and my family. And then when I came out for my visit, I fell in love. I love the campus. I love the guys. Seeing the team, that the team had done well the year before, and keeping a good group of guys from that team to go into the next year, my freshman year. I was excited about the opportunity, and I think Sash was a straight shooter, right? He didn't bullshit me, which I think happens a lot, right? You get sold a dream, and then sometimes it doesn't materialize. I think he was pretty honest with me. Everything that he kind of laid out in front of me as potential things that could happen, and he didn't really promise me anything. It was more so like, here are things that could happen as long as you're willing to put in the work. And all those things combined, I was like, you know what, this is the place for me. And fortunately, it worked out. You know, we lost in the College Cup my freshman year and then went on to win the next year. So a lot of credit and respect has to go to Sasha for the program he built there. I think it really prepares you for the next step. For me as a kid and throughout high school, I always dreamt of playing professional. And I think the last step of that decision came down to, what do I want to do after college? Do I want to play pro? Do I want to go sports directly? And I want to play pro. So I had to get out of my comfort zone. And that's how I kind of chose Maryland over UCLA. I felt like going there, being away from my family, all that would force me to grow up, force me to mature a little bit, and ultimately force me to be prepared to be away from my family when I become a professional.
And Mo, you mentioned that 2005 national championship team, the first national championship under Coach Tarofsky. What was that experience like, looking back, being a part of that group? And what did it take to kind of get to the top of the mountain?
We just had a Zoom call, actually, not long ago with that group, just kind of touching base with everyone and reconnecting. And I genuinely enjoyed it. It's been a while since I've seen some of those guys, so it was good to just connect with that group of guys again and relive some of those memories and some of those stories. But I think what was special about that group is, obviously, we had a good team. We had a good collection of players, both individually and collectively. But I think off the field, some of the memories that we built as a group, as a diverse group of players, you know, I think we checked every box. If you look at like the different demographics, as well as, I don't know how to describe, stereotype. We had the prototypical bros, like, you know, the guys who were more into like making sure that the freshmen were in line and keeping the freshmen in check and all that kind of stuff. And we had the guys who were like really, really focused on their education. And I just think we had a really diverse group and a close-knit group. And I think all that translated off the pitch onto the pitch. But that journey was incredible. I mean, we had some high moments, a lot of high moments, obviously, and finished on a high, but there was a couple spells during the course of that season where, you know, we were challenged, we were threatened. And I think we showed a lot of resilience during the course of that season. We showed a lot of heart. We showed a real never say never type attitude and mentality, and a next man up mentality. There were times where guys were injured. You saw Kenny Burtz got injured. and AJ De La Garza stepped right up. You know, he had his chance as a freshman, and he made it. He made the most of it. So I think that group was just special because of all the things that we did on the pitch, but off the field as well. We were just a close knit group of guys, and it just made that journey that much more special to go ahead and win that first trophy for Sasho with that group of players.
I was able to be a fly on the wall for that call, and it was absolutely hilarious. You guys going back and forth about different memories. I'm interested. We just asked this to Donovan Pines, who we had on the show last week, about his favorite Sasha Sarovsky story. What is your favorite Sasha Sarovsky story that you can tell on this podcast? That's appropriate for the podcast.
Well, I guess I'll tell one of the stories that I told that on that Zoom call. So at Maryland, you know, at halftime, you come in at halftime and there's the trailer. Everyone goes into the trailer. The players always go in first, and Sasha is like one of the last ones to come in. And it can go one of two ways, right? If we're winning the game and we're playing well, cool. It's an easy conversation. Sasha comes in and just kind of reinforces, yo, continue doing this, continue doing that, cut out some of this stuff. It's a good conversation. But if we're losing a game or if we're not playing well, we all come in and we're all just sitting there on pins and needles, just nervous, like, oh, that's what's about to happen right now. He's going to go crazy because that was Sasha. And so he comes in human. Like, you can literally see Steve come out of his head. He's so pissed off. Comes in. He's, like, pacing back and forth. Everyone kind of has their heads down because you don't want to make eye contact with them because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't want to be the person that gets called out or singled out in that moment. So everyone's kind of just like this, looking down, little quick glances up to see what's happening. So Sasha's, he's, like, pacing back and forth, just human, and hasn't said a word yet, just stomping his feet really aggressively. And there's also, like, a little back room in that trailer. So he, like, goes into that back room, comes back out, and when he does, he, like, slams the door, and then he's still standing in the doorway, and the door's, like, on a swivel, kind of. So he slams the door, and then he gets ready to start talking to us, like, start yelling at us, berating us, and then the door comes back and hits him in the back of the head. But in that moment, everyone kind of, like, glanced up because they heard it and looked, but you got to just kind of keep your head down and wait. So he kind of tries to play it off. Kills us, goes on a tirade and just kills us off. And then when he finally leaves the room, you know, we're pissed because we're not playing well either. But that moment kind of like just galvanized the group, and like we all kind of like started laughing. And we went back out in the second half, won the game. So maybe that moment was the turning point for us.
Now, you talked about how Sash prepared you for your own career. Why do you feel like he's so successful at producing so many high-level pro players? I mean, the names are pretty endless in terms of guys that have played overseas in MLS on different national teams. That's rare among a college program at this point in sort of American soccer. What do you think Sash does that separates that program and that culture that creates players like you and guys that have gone on to do those different things?
Well, one of the things is you just touched on there, culture. I think he's really created a culture where some of the stuff. So when I came to Maryland, I didn't need the culture to be instilled in me from Sasha directly. He's created a culture to where the seniors, the sophomores, the juniors, they're passing that on to the freshmen as soon as they come in. You've come into a group in an environment where you know what the expectations are, and then you're challenged every day in training. Every day, you're being held to a certain standard. And yes, you're self-motivating, you're pushing yourself, but then you have guys around that are pushing you as well, that are challenging you as well. I mean, sometimes our trainings were harder than games that we played in. And that's a credit to the players that we have there, but then also to the standard that Sasha set for the players. And I think also one thing that he did well with me is, and I think he's done well with other players, is he knows how to challenge individual players, right? Like, the three of us can all be on a team, and what works to challenge and bring up the best in me might not be the same for you, for either of you guys, you know? And I think he's found a way to identify certain characteristics of players and recognize what drives them, what pushes them, how do I challenge this person to get the best out of them. And I think he did that with me. And as you said, there's a list of players that have gone on to have pro careers and do well and be successful, not only in college, but in the professional stage as well. And I think a lot of that comes from that.
Maurice, you leave Maryland a year early. You're the first pick of the MLS Super Draft, signed with Toronto. And then you eventually make your way overseas with the Rangers, the Scottish Premier League. And when researching for this interview, Taylor shared a clip of that goal in 2010 in the Old Firm against Celtic. And, you know, I had never known too much about the rivalry, but I watched that clip and I got goosebumps, and I don't really know why I was just watching that clip. maybe explain to our listeners just kind of the history behind that rivalry and what it was like for you and the kind of journey you had with that club to score that goal in that moment.
Yeah, I would say that it was probably the easiest goal I've scored in my career when you see the tap-in, but probably one of the most impactful goals that I've ever scored in my career. And it goes to the rivalry. I would say in soccer, maybe in sports, this is probably one of the biggest rivalries, because not only is it two teams in the same city, not only is it the two best teams within the country in this league as well, I would say it goes deeper than that, because historically, you know, it had to do with religion as well. Celtic was predominantly a Catholic club and Rangers were predominantly a Protestant club. So you can see how tension built and how the rivalry really developed. But when I first got there, you just know. You know that that's your enemy. Like, it's laid out in front of you every day of the year, pretty much. You walk around the city and you have Rangers fans who adore you and are willing to give you the shirt off their back. And then you turn the corner and there's Celtic fans who are trying to steal that shirt off your back. You know, like, it's a real – the rivalry is deep, and the passion for both clubs on either end of it is super deep too. And it makes for a really enjoyable environment. You want to play in front of crowds like that where fans live and breathe every minute of the game and every motion and every action that you do. But that goal was special for me. It was special for our team. The way that season played out, 2010 season, so I was coming back. I started out the season injured, and I had to work my way back into the team, work my way back to fitness. I was coming into that game, I was disappointed I didn't start the game, but that's how it played out. But I came off the bench, and crazy enough, my first touch, I scored. But they called it back for, I think, like a handball or something like that. Someone else handballed it, got in my way, stole my glory. But so the game, let me give you a little bit more context, actually, sorry. So going into that game, we're first place, Celtic are in second place. And the gap is, I believe, 4 points. So if Celtic win the game, they narrow that to 1 point. If we win, jump to 7. And at that point, it pretty much would have ended the season. We would have won the league. There's only, I don't know, a handful of games left that we went and dropped points. So going into the game, that's the situation. That's the scenario. It's at our place, at Ibrox. Packed stadium, of course. Fans are going crazy. Like I said, come off the bench, score the goal. They call it back for offsides. And now game's just playing out back and forth, back and forth. It's like the 92nd, 93rd minute of the game. We get a corner kick. At that point, I think everyone's just thinking, okay, it's going to be a draw. Okay, fair enough, point for each side. And so the ball gets played in. I made a run near post. It goes over my head. And I just stayed busy. I just stayed active, trying to just see if any scraps would fall my way and looking for some loose change, basically. And the way it played out, you know, it falls to the back post. Maji Bulgaria takes it off his chest, takes a shot, keeper saves it. And Chris Boyd was like prolific goal scorer for us. I mean, he's literally no more than 3 yards out. Him and the keeper are just playing like back and forth pretty much. Like, he's tapping it, the keeper's saving it, tapping it, he's saving it. I thank God that he didn't score, because that would have stole my moment. But go back and forth a couple of times. And then, like I said, I was just floating around on that back post. Well, what's now become the back post, because the way the play's developed, fell to me. And, I mean, tap in of my lifetime. And I just took off, like on a sprint, and I mean, the stadium's just going absolutely crazy. Everyone comes, tackles me, and when I finally got up, it was crazy, because the goal that I scored, and directly behind me, the opposite end goal, is where the Celtic fans were. And so as I'm turning around to jog back for the kickoff, I'm looking around the stadium, and everyone's still going just nuts. Like I said, 92nd minute of the game. There's no – obviously, there can't be that much more time added. And I'm looking around, 3/4 of the stadium, everyone's going nuts. And then that just one little strip, you just see everyone quiet, somber, depressed, heads down. And I was like, yeah, that's what it's about right there. Like, that feeling right there. And it's crazy, because to this day, like literally to this day, I still get messages on Twitter, Instagram, all kinds of social media with fans talking about where they were and how they experienced that moment, whether they're in the stadium and they fell 3 rows down, or they're in a bar and drunk, and whatever the situation was, to be able to like create a moment and share a moment to where people can talk about that for years. I mean, we're in 2019 now. People are still messaging me about that goal. It's, for me, it was truly special.
Now, you had the chance, obviously, to play in the Scottish Premier League. You had a brief stint in the Premier League with Stoke City. You got a chance to play in Turkey and play in the Champions League. What was it like for you to be able to sort of achieve a lot of your professional dreams in terms of going overseas? Because I remember talking to Sacho when we were talking about your career a little bit. You know, you always wanted that sort of overseas career. You wanted to play in Europe and make an impact there. To achieve some of those dreams, when you look back at that now, what is it? What does it feel like?
It's incredible. I mean, as a kid, you run around the house playing soccer and, oh, and Mouadou scores in the World Cup final, or, oh, and he scores a goal to put his team through in the champion, you know, all those kind of moments. And for me, they were all European-based, as you said. So whether it's Champions League and then internationally based as well, going to the World Cup. And so to get the opportunity to go to Europe, to win trophy, to win titles, to win cups, to play in front of incredible crowd and all these different stadiums, to play against some of the best players in the world, and then to go to the World Cup as well, and to have my family be there at the World Cup and experience that and share those moments with them, it's all I ever wanted. You know, I dreamt of that as a kid, and you sometimes, as you're going through the process, you're dreaming of it, but at times it can seem far-fetched, right? Because everyone's trajectory is different. So when I was younger, I saw some of my friends, some of my teammates turn pro at an early age. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, why am I not getting these opportunities? But then I was quickly reminded, and some of the best advice I got when I was young is that everyone's path is different, right? You shouldn't be looking at whatever else is doing. Just kind of focus on what you're doing and stay in your lane, because that's how you stay in the driving seat of your own career. And so I did that. You know, my career wasn't to go pro straight out of high school. It was to go to Maryland to win championship there, to develop, to grow, both on the pitch as well as a person, and then to make my jump to professionals and continue my development and my growth there. So when I look back on it, I look back with great memories, man. Very proud of what I was able to accomplish. A little bit sad the way it ended with injuries, being you never want to end your career and have it be taken from you, but that's the reality. And, you know, I'm okay with that now. I've come into a career now, another career choice that I thoroughly am enjoying. And so I'm happy with everything I was able to achieve on the pitch.
Do you remember where you were when you got the call that you had made the World Cup team? The ultimate achievement for a soccer player to make the World Cup team. Do you remember where you were when you got it?
Well, yeah, because so the way that played out, we were in camp first, and there was probably, bad with numbers. I'm trying to remember how many people made the team. I think maybe like 23 made the roster, and there might have been camp. So we were all in camp. We were all in camp going through trainings, you know, two-a-days and fitness tests and this and that. Part of it is, well, most of it is obviously preparation for the World Cup. But then it's also a chance for Bob Bradley to weed out the seven who aren't going to be involved. And so you feel confident that you're doing well, that this is happening. But at the same time, there's always that little bit of doubt where you're like, did I do enough? Did I not do enough? But I felt confident that, you know, I was playing well, that I was in good form, and all the things, I was doing all the things that I could control. So where was I when I got the call? I was in camp, and the call came via, I got a call from to my room. I was in my room, and they were like, hey, come downstairs to this meeting room or whatever. And we kind of all knew that, like, that day, like, they were making decisions, they were making cuts. So we didn't know. When I got that call, I was like, oh, shit, is this good or is this bad? Like, am I coming down to tell me that I'm going home? And I remember coming down into the room, and there was already a group of guys in there, and we're kind of all just like sizing each other up like this. And as the numbers kept getting bigger and bigger, like, oh, okay, like, yo, we're going, like, this is the group. And yeah, I remember, you know, the excitement, the sigh of relief, but then also straight away, I went to go reach out to some of the guys who were going home, because, you know, during that process, they had earned a spot just as much as we did. You know, they were there doing those trainings. They played a role in World Cup qualifying. So that was the hard part, you know, having to part ways with them, but they were very enthusiastic and encouraging for us to go out there and have a good tournament. And I mean, 4 years later, I was on the other end of that. Right. So I know it's what it's like to be on both sides of that coin, but yeah, it was that was definitely a special moment. One that's up there in terms of when I look back on my career.
And Maurice, looking back on that 2010 World Cup, unfortunately, you were at the center of one of the great non-goals in the history of the World Cup, that game against Slovenia. Now, the United States went on. We beat Algeria, advanced to the round of 16. But that game in particular, you know, coming back from 2-0 at halftime, able to tie, and then you had the winning goal right there. 10 years later, do you still get asked about that call all the time?
It's nonstop, nonstop. It's almost as, I'd say the Celtic goal is the thing that people want to talk about the most, and then right after that is that. And man, I just look, I think back to, like I said, when I was a kid. Oh, and that dude gets the ball and he scores a goal in the World Cup. Like, my mom was in the stands, my brother were in the stands. So it was like the two of them were there. It was crazy the way that game played out, because, again, I was disappointed I wasn't starting that game. But whatever, me and Benny, Bob told us, like, hey, warm up at halftime. So the team goes in at halftime. We're down 2-0, which I didn't see that coming. You know, I bet England was going to be the toughest game of that group. And then the next two games, I thought were winnable. But we're down 2-0. We're like, oh, wow, this, okay. We came out super flat, got smacked up real quick. And so Benny and I are talking, like, dude, we have nothing to lose. Let's go out there and try to make an impact. Let's try to change this game. Like, we're better than this team. Let's try to show that. So we came out in that second half, and that was our mentality. That was our mindset. We needed to add a spark to this group and try to bring some life to the team. And, I mean, we scored some incredible goals. I don't know if you guys remember the two goals in that game. Landon scored from, like, what looked like the touchline, basically, from an incredible ink. Yeah, I don't know how he did that. And then Mikey, like, I've never seen anyone strike the ball the way he did it. Like, he almost toe pokes it or hits it with, like, the sole of his foot, and it, like, crazy, crazy goal.
The trajectory makes no sense on how he hit that. Yeah.
I remember watching it going, okay, let's celebrate. But yeah, I was dumbfounded, like, what? How? All right. So we're 2-2 at that point, and we had the upper hand, creating better chances. We get a set piece, and everyone's going forward. You know, Gooch goes forward. All the big guys all the big guys go forward. And I was supposed to kind of get the top of the box and, in the event of a counterattack, put out the fire type situation. And as I'm looking around, it's on the right-hand side. Landon's getting ready to post the ball. And as I'm looking around, the guy who's supposed to be marking me is just super passive. Like, I'm kind of just moving a little bit just to kind of bait and see what he's doing. And he's not really going with me. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and just gamble. I'm going to take a chance because he's not really marking me. Same thing with the Celtic goal. It's some scraps fall. I want to be there to pick him up. And little did I know, he was literally just not going to mark me. So Landon's approaching the ball. So I kind of like start timing my run with his approach, start making my run. This guy doesn't want to mark me. So I said, okay, cool. I just continue my run. Landon puts a ball in. At that point, I didn't know it until after the fact when I watched the video back. But the reason why the path is so clear is because everyone on our team is being held and dragged back and, you know, all that. And so it created a path for me. I just ran onto it, timed it perfectly on my left foot, goal, and I take off. With, like, in my mind, I thought I was going to find my mom and my brother and go celebrate with them. So I'm on a sprint, like, to that side because I knew where they were in terms of – I know what side of the stadium they were in. But then, like, a second whistle blows, and I'm like, the hell? What? Like – And I mean, obviously, you in most cases you object every call, right? Because you think you never committed a foul, you never did anything, you didn't use your hand. So, but I genuinely knew I did nothing because this guy wasn't marking me. I knew I wasn't offside. Like I said, I timed my run perfectly with Landon's, and so that happens. Game plays out. We draw 2-2, and I mean, after the game, I think the worst part is just Koulibaly, the referee, had no answers for us. In the game, he had no answers for us. After the game, he had no answers for us. Post-game press conferences, the guy just had no answers as to what the call was. So was it a handball? No, obviously it wasn't a handball. Was it a foul? Like I said, when you go back and watch it and you see all the little frozen screen grabs and whatnot and how many fouls that he could have called, how many potential penalties he could have called for us, but somehow phantom call and – didn't get my moment there, but it worked out. It made Landon's goal that much more special, dramatic effect, and we had a decent run in that tournament.
You got to jump on the landing down the dog pile.
Infuriating to watch to this day.
Still, it really is. It really is. And Sasha made you relive it again during that Zoom call. And everyone's just like, oh, my God, how did that happen? As he says, he was freaking out more than if he'd lost a game in Maryland, watching you not be able to get that goal.
Yeah, it was definitely hurt. I mean, when I look back on my career, what are my thoughts? I mean, a lot of joy. And then I'd say two real sour moments. And that was one of them. And then the way the rest of that tournament played out, because I thought we could have made it to the semifinals of that tournament. The Ghana game, crippling. And then I think another moment, just off the top of my head, would be our Olympic team. Our Olympic team had, I mean, on paper, we had so much talent, and we underachieved, man. I genuinely believe we should have medaled that tournament. I'm sure a lot of people will say that about their teams, their respective teams and other countries, but we should have medaled that tournament.
You bring that up now, and there is a lot of unanswered questions in terms of, like, that team obviously had a tough group, but you had all the talent to get through towards a medal type of round. What was the experience of the Olympics like just in totality, being out there with all those different athletes? That had to have been pretty crazy.
It was crazy. So Team USA, we kind of like congregated together before opening ceremony. So we're in this big auditorium type venue. So you're getting a chance to meet guys like D Wade and Kobe, rest in peace. And you know, all the NBA guys, but then all the other athletes across the board, like Deontay Wilder's there, which is crazy. Like, I have a picture with him and he's like, I wouldn't say a young kid or like, but he's not this monster that he is now, but just getting a chance to meet so many different athletes that you grow up watching from afar and you respect what they've done in their careers and now be in the same room with them and share that experience with them. And then going out for opening ceremonies. And now that grows even more because now you're with all the countries. So having a chance to just bounce around and mingle and meet different people. And that experience was really incredible. The Olympic Village, same thing. It's just like, everyone is there, and it sucked for it. The one part that was kind of sucked for us is we only stayed there for a day, and then they moved us to a hotel because they wanted us to be more focused, I guess, or whatever. But the Olympic experience was incredible. Those are guys that some of my closest friends that I was on that team with, and just being able to share that experience with them, and you know, we all kind of share that same sentiment that we should have medaled. I mean, when I rattle off some of the names, like Charlie Davey, Josie, Stu Holden, Michael Bradley, Sasha Kleschen, Parker's game, Brad Guzan. I mean, Robbie Rogers. There's just so many players that were on that team. And yeah, I look back on it, I'm just like, all right, in another lifetime.
A lot of full national team caps in that group right there.
Yeah, right. It was incredible. I think I would say, and that doesn't happen often, you guys know how the youth systems work. It doesn't always translate, right? You don't always graduate from U20 to the Olympic team to the full team, or even from just the Olympic team to the full team, because it's not that big of a jump there. You're U23 for the Olympic team. But I want to say, I would bet 95% of our team were capped with the full team, which is, I mean, doesn't sound that crazy, but it really is.
When you think back about Maryland soccer, final question, then we'll get to some rapid fire for you real quick. You were sending messages of support to that 2018 team as we were going through that run to win the national championship, putting stuff on Instagram and Twitter. How is it for you to watch the current team play and support them and continue to sort of support the culture that Sasha has created that you talk so fondly about?
When you're a part of something special, like we all were, when you've had success somewhere, especially when you've won things, when you've been a part of the early stages of building a culture and being a part of a culture, you don't lose that. And so my passion for Maryland, that's never gonna go anywhere. You know, I'm a Terp for life. You start off this podcast saying that, and that's fact. So I'm always gonna support. I need to find a time and a chance to get back out there and be there in person. But whether it's from afar, whether it's when I was abroad, whether it's now that I'm back here in the States, I'm always going to support. And to see the team continue to achieve and strive for excellence, all I can do is applaud and be proud. Those are my brothers, you know? They're younger than me now. They're my little brothers now. But and then now being on this side of the game too, I have a chance to come across and meet quite a few different players and former Terps. And it's always nice to just be able to share stories. And even when they ask for advice, be able to pass along advice and, you know, tell them what my experience was like so they can either learn from the good things that I've done or not make the same mistakes that I made. But yeah, when you're a part of something as special as what we had there, and that's not just even in just in athletics, not just in soccer, but just being a part of Maryland in general, that that community, that culture, that university, it's something special. And I think everyone that was there, that was a part of that, would attest to that.
We'll get you out of here on a couple of rapid fire questions. First of all, the show you're watching right now during quarantine.
Oh man, there's so many. What's the last one we just watched? Actually, the Tiger King. Yeah, I think that was probably the most recent one we watched. I'm blanking right now. Now that you ask me, I'm blanking. And if I turn on my Netflix right now, you'll list the shows. But yeah, that's the one. That's the first one that comes to mind.
How about a activity you're using to fight off boredom during quarantine?
Well, okay, that's easy. And it's not one that I chose, but my girl has me doing all kinds of stuff around the house, like painting rooms. She had me like hanging up shiplap. So I'm living on YouTube, like learning how to, I guess she, in her mind, she has this vision of me being this super handyman, Bob the Builder type character, which I'm not. So it's actually been encouraging though, because after I accomplished one task, I'm like, you know what? I can do this. If I get off this call, I'm going to go finish that up, actually, hanging up some shit.
So. Well, we've given you a break, I guess, from the yeah. and stuff. You're welcome. All right,
Earning a lot of points, though. That's always good. That's always good. Your favorite place that you played in your career, stadium-wise, could be a home stadium. I guess we'll take out the Ebrox. You talked about that, but a stadium you played in.
So I can't – not Rangers? Oh, so
we'll,
the foreign
like – we'll say, yeah, we'll say Rangers is number one probably anyway. So a foreign team that you played, so as a visitor.
As a visitor, ooh. You know, when I was in Turkey, playing away at Fenerbahce was, I mean, it is crazy. You've probably seen it on TV. You've probably seen, like, some of those foreign leagues on TV where they have, like, the flares and smoke and all that. And, I mean, it was an intimidating place to go. I'd say that one is up there. That was actually – I like playing in away stadiums where the fans are crazy, where they're talking shit to you the whole time, where they're, like, heckling you. I like that. And so – to walk out there and kind of feel like, ooh, this is okay. That was a crazy stadium to play in. There's a host of other ones that come to mind.
Toughest player you ever faced or toughest matchup you ever had in your career?
That's easy, Messi. I mean, greatest player ever, in my opinion. The thing about him is while the rest of us try to dribble, he just runs and the ball follows him. So, like, different. It's, you know, the greatest players can achieve a level of, like, here, and then Messi's here, you know? So it's unfair almost. The guy's not a human. His change of direction, his IQ of the game, he's just got it all. And, yeah, so that was probably that was the hardest player that I've ever played against, but then also, like, one of the most fun just because, you know, he's the greatest player ever.
We'll get you out here on this one. We ask everyone when we're in College Park, obviously we're all separate at this point, what their favorite place to eat in College Park is. Since we've been in quarantine, we've gone with favorite home-cooked meal. But I'll ask you both, your favorite place to eat when you were in College Park, whether it's still there or gone, and then your favorite home-cooked meal.
Okay, favorite place to eat. I think back. You know, we used to go to Noodles a lot. Is that still there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
We used to go there a lot, actually. Cluck U.
Yes. Late staple. U.
Yeah, that's a staple.
And what's a breakfast spot that was right across? Bagel Place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I'll go with, I mean, I gave you three. I'll go with those. And then home cooked meal. Her family was just in town, actually. And her family's they're Mexican. So I love Mexican food. So pretty much anything Mexican, destroy.
Send Moadu your Mexican food right now. Let the man eat during quarantine.
Please.
During this time.
Send it over.
Thank you so much, Mo, for giving us a lot of your time. Enjoyed all the stories, and hope to see you back at Ludwig Field for a game sometime soon. We got to get Sasha. We got to get that 05 team back and get you guys back in the stadium. College Park would love to see you guys.
We got to set that up for sure.
Appreciate all your time, and stay safe out there.
All right, guys. Appreciate it.
Back here on Hear the Turtle, presented by Toyota, and Keith, fantastic stuff from Mo Adu. And you talked about, going into the interview, that 2010 World Cup team. There hasn't, I think, you know, there's been a lot of bad calls in American sports across the globe. That will be always, for the rest of my life, be one of the all-time, what is happening here when he scored? Because, you know, as a Maryland guy, it was even more of an awesome moment because you had a Maryland guy for that split second scoring what would have been a winning goal in a World Cup game. It was late in the match, and I'll never know. And Mo will never know what that call was. You'll never know, Keith. I don't think the referee knows.
And the tough thing is that would have changed their standing in the group.
Oh, yeah.
If they had won that game. So you figure, okay, maybe things go different in that round of 16. And, you know, who knows? Like, what could have happened?
Well, as he says, his moment, which could have been his moment, gets taken over by Landon Donovan the next match against Algeria, scoring the late winner, which sends the U.S. through to the round of 16 against Ghana. But as you said, if they win that game against Slovenia, maybe Algeria, there's a little bit more relaxation. The U.S. played great against Algeria in that game, had a bunch of chances to score. If they win both games, that sort of changes the narrative of what you're doing going into the Ghana game. But U.S. still had chances to beat Ghana as well, could not get it done. But Mo ended up starting that next game against Algeria and played really great in his lone World Cup appearance. And as he talked about, was on the other end 4 years later, did not make the team. But is now doing fantastic analyst work. That you really should go watch that clip of him on Inside the NBA with Stu Holden and all those guys. It's a very entertaining. It's a very entertaining situation, and good for Mo to hit the bank three at the Inside the NBA studios. That he will never forget. But thanks to him as well. Two straight soccer guests, Keith, from two different generations of Maryland soccer. Donovan Pines last week, who gave us some great stuff. Make sure if you missed that to go listen to that. A 2018 national champion, and then Marisa Du, a 2005 national champion. We now need to get one of the 2008 national champions on, Keith, to complete the one of the 1968 national champions. We'll complete all four.
Complete the Mount Rushmore of Maryland soccer years.
The Mount Rushmore of Maryland soccer. So fantastic stuff from Mo Adu, and we do appreciate his time. Keith, we are rolling into the end of the school year now. Have to shout out our graduates who will graduate as we record here on Sunday and release on Monday. This next Friday was Maryland graduation. Should obviously be all of the pomp and circumstance that happens at the Xfinity Center and all the different school graduations. Unfortunately, that will not be the case. The university will hold a virtual ceremony for our graduates. But to our student-athlete graduates who you and I work directly with, a very, very big moment, and we're very happy for them.
One of the bigger moments of your life or of your academic career, obviously, is getting to walk across that stage or hear your name called during your college graduation. So while they won't be able to do it in person yet, and maybe in the winter, there's an opportunity for our spring graduates to come back and hear their name called. You'll still get to be recognized this coming week for all their hard work.
And all of the graduates beyond Maryland, the high school graduates, the other college graduates, a tough time to not be able to sort of have the normal thing. So shout out to all of those people.
I will say this is a very specific complaint, but graduation at Xfinity Center that season in the spring when there's a new group, a new class in there every day, it does get tough for the few people it affects that have an office in the Xfinity Center and try and get to work and park. That being said, if I could go back to that right now and be around everybody and be around those moments again, I would do it. But that is a tough couple weeks.
That is true. We do, as employees of the athletics department, do, and everyone does it. And anyone that says they don't complain about this is lying to you. The amount of, like, there's college graduations for a whole week, then you have University of Maryland, University College graduations, and then you have all the high school graduations. So from like PG County, I think Montgomery County might do there. And so you have all these people, and it's impossible to park, and it's impossible to get in. Everyone complains, everyone gets upset. But as you said, Keith, now thinking back on it, I wish all of those people were allowed to go into graduations, because that's what it's all about, and you'll never get that moment back. So maybe that'll take away our complaints, as we will appreciate that situation more.
I think it's a fair trade-off.
But that's enough for us on Hear the Turtle as we give you a little inside baseball behind athletic department employee complaining. Make sure to follow all of our social media channels at Hear the Turtle on Twitter, at Hear the Turtle on Instagram. Make sure to look out for all of the graduation content that will come from all of your Maryland social media channels. And if you see a student athlete, maybe their retweet gets in your feed, something like that, shoot them a tweet or something of congratulations. I'm sure they'll really appreciate it in this time. Make sure to follow Keith at Sned311. He might be giving mountain biking updates soon,
yeah,
as that is now open for him to do.
We'll see. Or maybe Wayne Rooney will retweet me.
Wayne Rooney did check in on the Hear the Turtle Twitter feed. Maybe the biggest like in Hear the Turtle history from Wayne Rooney and his 17 million followers.
We'll take it, man. We'll take it.
Very cool for Donovan Pines to have that guy come back and see that and watch that. You can follow me at TaylorSmythe10 for other stuff. A lot of it involving Hear the Turtle. And we'll see you next week on Hear the Turtle presented by Toyota.
Go Terps.